Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Time now for Ken and Curtis with Ken Laird and Chris Curtis on WEEI.
What a weekend in Boston. Ken Laird is heading out of town, spend some family time. Well-earned days off for Ken. In his stead is Brian Barrett. And it's very rare that I have the privilege to say that it's a historic weekend in Boston, considering almost everything's been done here about 15 different times, considering how long it's been around. But first time ever, consecutive Game 7s in Boston. The weather is hot, perfect. Get outside, enjoy the day, and you have two phenomenal Game 7s. And, Brian, it is so refreshing with the Celtics, with Tatum. I don't know where that ranks all time for me. I think it's the greatest single performance I've seen by a Celtic in my lifetime in an elimination game. And to hear these guys after the game so openly and candidly talking about their place and what this means and how much they enjoy this remarkable performance, hearing Smart and the teammates and Tatum. I just can't remember a night like that by a singular player in a game that they could be eliminated in.
Well, yeah, and just the response, right? I mean, think about the narrative just 48 hours ago. I mean, that was an excruciating loss. I mean, that was incredibly painful. And for them to respond, and in particular Tatum, I feel like he completely changed the narrative on himself, because going into that game, don't you feel that by the time we got to Friday afternoon, most of it was being thrown at Tatum? Like, we need to see the Jason Tatum game. Al had a great game.
Even early on last night, the criticism of him, you know, complaining about a call and not getting back on defense that had really been percolating after the brutal Game 5 loss. But it really is emblematic of who this team has been, that they just trust that they have the guys. They don't need to overreact. They don't need to break up Jalen and Jason. They don't need to change everything. They got a new coach who, the fact that he didn't get a finalist for the Coach of the Year seems absurd, but Ime has been steady the entire time, and the guys just trust one another that they'll eventually, their talent will win out, and it sure did last night, and it is just so impressive to watch.
Well, and this is the thing, like, you watch last night, and Giannis Antetokounmpo is one of the most dominating playoff games since Shaq. He had 44-20, first guy to go for 40-20 since Shaq in 2001, and he was the second best player on the floor. Tatum was better than him, and the thing that stuck out to me more so than anything else was just Tatum in that fourth quarter, 16 points, 6 for 10, and all the pressure was on Jason Tatum, because they put him on the bench for like 2 minutes to begin the quarter, and all of a sudden the Bucks go on their run, so he's going to come back in the game and save them, and then the Bucks make another run. Remember, what was it, about 6 minutes left, they cut it to 5. Wow. And Tatum gets it, and he hits a massive 3 to put him up 8, and after that it was just like Tatum was sending a message to them, like, no, you're not winning. No. You're not beating us today. And I truly believe, Curtis, it's the best performance we've seen from a Celtics this century. Wow. Better than Pearson Game 7 against LeBron James, where those two went back. And it had that feel, didn't it, where it was like Giannis versus Tatum.
Totally.
Every time down the court, it was awesome. It was like I said this last night. I was on last night after the game, and I said, I wish I wasn't like emotionally invested, because I was so nervous that the Celtics were going to find a way to lose that game, because we all saw what happened the other night.
Like, you that can't was get just a bigger kick in the pants loss. And then to come back with that performance, as you noted, he wasn't going to let it get down to 2 or 3 points again. He was going to make sure that they were, you know, had breathing distance between them and the Bucks. Interesting note, Ken sent me the stat from SportsCenter this morning. Brian Windhorst, our favorite LeBron caddy who talks basketball at ESPN, pointed out that the Bucks had won 8 consecutive closeout games with this team.
Wow.
So this team was at home, coming off such an incredible road win, pulling victory from the jaws of defeat, and they come home. The whole, I don't know, Sean Grandy was posting that the windows surrounding the Celtics hotel were saying Bucks in 6, and the whole city was going crazy. I guess it was a shooting after the game. A little wild scene out, and they call it Deer Country. I mean, my God.
Deer District, yeah.
What idiots. I mean, talk about a one-horse town. You call it Deer Country. Anyway.
Everyone copied the Raptors. Remember they had the
Jurassic Park. Yeah. You know what? That sucks, too. Just call it whatever it is, and then people can go and watch the game. We don't rename City Hall Plaza Title Town because they had ceremonies there. It's still City Hall Plaza. Anyway, who cares about that? But incredible 8 consecutive closeout games that they stopped last night. And then you have the stat from, you know, as you alluded to, most points when facing elimination in Celtics history. They've had a couple playoff games. I don't know.
Decent players.
Pretty good. I mean, some of the greatest players in the history of the sport. And it's 47 points for Sam Jones is still the record in 1963. He was probably playing the Wichita Witches. And then you had Jason Tatum tying Paul Pierce. I was at that Game 7 in 2008 when the Celtics and Cavs were going back and forth. You had LeBron. You had Paul. That was sensational because of all that was on the line. And they hated each other. I mean, LeBron and Pierce and that big three with KG, they despised LeBron. And the Garden was electric. It was also an afternoon game, if I recall. And then who was the guy? We were talking before the show at the corner. The guy they picked up,
P.J. Brown,
had maybe the biggest shot of the game, which is ironic. But
he's like 60.
I know, but it really is incredible. And then we were also looking into the history of what this means, Final Fours this century. So I have the Patriots with 13 AFC Championship appearances or Super Bowl, obviously. Red Sox with 5. Celtics, this would mark how many this century? Because you had the 2000 against the Nets, you had 2008. I don't know. We'll do the math during the break, but it is an ungodly number.
Yeah, the Bruins are 3. It's only the cup years, and I believe the Celtics are now at 9.
So you're looking at 13 for the Patriots, 9 for the Celtics, brings you to 22, 3 for the Bruins, 25. 30 Final Four appearances for the 4 major teams this century. 30 appearances with the Final Four teams left in their respective leagues since 2000. So in 22 years, your teams have reached this stage 30 times. We're on the, you know, the Celtics are on the verge of that, and the Bruins are trying to advance today to get to the semifinals. But 30 in 20 years is remarkable. And I just would be interested in your thoughts out there, 617-779-7937. Does this bring Tatum officially? Was last night the official arrival? He's already been the biggest star in town, but as a clutch guy, I think he needed a game like that. I said yesterday with Ken and Razor filling in for Greg when they were returning for Ireland, I said, you know, we need a 40-point game from Tatum. It feels like this is the night following up of that brutal loss. And once again, this team, when it seemed as though the entire nation was waiting for this little fade that they were on from January until now, that had finally, that balloon had been popped in Game 5, to come back on the road, I mean, I don't know. Incredible.
Yeah, and I think the thing about Tatum now is, like, it's not just on him, but it's on imperative that everybody else finishes the job, right? Because then this will just be a footnote. Like, we'll remember this game, but if they lose Game 7, and I'm not saying there's a shame in losing to Giannis, but if you lose this, it almost becomes the Julio Jones catch, where Julio Jones made arguably the greatest catch I've ever seen in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. And
right. What
was it after that? Did they get the holding penalty or did Matt Ryan take a sack? Either way, they were in field goal range,
right. And
it should have clinched the game. And nobody's going to remember that Julio Jones catch. It's a footnote, right?
That is such I watched that the weekend that Brady retired. They re-aired all the games, living the Brady retirement, you know, best moments. It is still stunning watching that, knowing the outcome. Knowing that it's going to end with the Patriots winning in overtime, those play calls. I digress.
It was absolutely atrocious, and like I still don't know how he stayed in bounds with that catch. Like,
it was incredible.
When you saw it in real time, nobody thought he was in. But I feel like if Tatum goes out on Sunday, or the Celtics in general go out on Sunday and they lay an egg, then I don't think this game is remembered for what it is, right? Because if the Celtics go on and they win this series and they make it to the NBA Finals, we're always going to remember Tatum Game 6 because they finished the job. They beat the Milwaukee Bucks. This is sort of the point we will point back to in the Celtics run. If they end up winning a championship this year, we'll say game six, Tatum saved the season, went into Giannis's place, and he outplayed Giannis. But if they lose tomorrow, I feel like this is just a footnote in history. We don't really point back to Tatum having this outstanding game. Now, maybe next year, if the Celtics win the championship, we can say, oh, they grew from that experience. Remember what Tatum did in game six. But I feel like for this to be the defining moment, and this is where I come back to the Pierce comparison, they got to finish it. They got to finish the job tomorrow, which is going to be no easy task. I mean, this is like, it feels like a heavyweight fight. Like, and tomorrow is just going to be excruciating because every possession is going to be like stressing you out to see what happens and how the officials call the game, which has become a narrative in and of itself this whole series, because I don't know how you officiate Giannis. But I do really feel like tomorrow, if Tatum doesn't play well and if they don't finish the job, everybody's going to forget about game six.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're four games. The road team is 4-2 through six in this series against the Bucks. And I don't know. I'm not an NBA historian, but for my money, I can't remember a six-game series thus far as back and forth with such talent, with such incredible pressure. I mean, it has been absolutely amazing. And the one I heard bandied about yesterday was the Torrey Krug hit against the Blues. That if the Bruins, which the Bruins didn't win the cup, that's kind of, that might have been a statue somewhere. I mean, that might have been a moment chronicled forever, and it's just an afterthought now because they lost in Game 7 at home. So, obviously, they need to win it tomorrow. But we have the Bruins today, 4:30 today for the Bruins, 3:30 tomorrow for the Celtics. Never happened in the history of this town. Their 31st appearance for this city in 2000 on the line in the Final Four. Just when you think that this decade of or two decades of dominance is about to wane, you know, you had the 2011 Bruins sort of picked up the slack because the Patriots were out of it from 2004 to 2014. Then you had the 2013 Sox pick up after the 2011 Bruins, 2013 Sox. Then the Patriots get back to winning. And now the Patriots have sort of stopped winning. And now all of a sudden you have the Bruins and the Celtics competing deep into their playoff seasons. And I just think it really is, I don't know, we've said it a million times how rare it is, how unbelievable it is, but I just can't, for the first time in the history of this town, to have consecutive days of Game 7, we might as well enjoy it while it's here. So I'll be interested in your thoughts on this, anything. We'll get to the Patriots later on today. We'll get into a little bit of how, you know, the offensive coordinator has been slightly and awkwardly discussed about a potential tryout in training camp, which is exactly what a rookie quarterback needs. Be interested in your thoughts on the Patriots schedule. We'll get to
see a loss.
17-0. Book it. And I'd like your thoughts on Brian's take this morning that the performance of Jason Tatum, while all-time great in Celtics history, only stands there if they win tomorrow. I think nationally, what that did last night will not be changed. I think Tatum having that performance on that stage, but sadly, the Celtics standards are different than the national standards when it comes to great players because we've had so many come through here. But let's get to Brian Barrett and what's trending.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it. Ken and Curtis on WEEI.
Jamie, what did you see from just the level of shot making from Jason, particularly in that fourth quarter when the Bucks was making the run at you guys?
Yeah, obviously he hit some big ones, but throughout the game, he did that and, you know, made the right play as well. So, drew a crowd, got off the ball, didn't play in the crowd a ton, limited our turnovers only to 8, and then got favorable matchups and knocked them down, whether going to the basket or, you know, rising up for a shot. So, huge night by him, other guys as well, but definitely needed.
That is Ime Udoka following the historic performance from Jason Tatum in Game 6. Celtics even the series. Game 7 tomorrow, 3:30 at the Garden. It is a gorgeous weekend. There are going to be jorts everywhere on Canal Street outside of the Garden on tomorrow afternoon. Today, the Bruins look to reach their semifinals of the Eastern Conference by beating the Carolina Hurricanes in the hockey hotbed of Raleigh. We're taking your calls on the Celtics win last night. Has Tatum already arrived, as Brian Barrett, who's in for Ken today, said, or do you think that he needs to close it out in Game 7? Let's get to your calls on all of this. So, good morning, Mike in Malden. How are you?
Here's the thing. So, I mean, I am a Green Teamer through and through. I have all my pets are named after Boston Celtics legends. In 2002, I thought they were going to beat the Lakers in the finals because they'd beat them twice in the regular season. Right? Like, all the way.
Total.
Tatum needs to win, not only this game, but they need to make a competitive Eastern Conference Finals for them to have arrived. If they lose Game 7, you're losing to a worse team, right, at home. A worse team that doesn't have their second-best player at home. Like, they really need to keep going. Otherwise, it's like a falsetto, right? It's the Game 7 against the Cavs in 2017.
But do you think last night will sort of disappear in a way if they lose tomorrow, say, you know, 102-99 at home against the Bucks?
It's Kelly Olynyk's Game 7 against the Wizards, right? I mean, it's
It's a little better than that, Mike. I'm curious. What Celtic are your dogs named after?
We got a Paul Pierce, a Bob Cousy. We have right now a brand new JoJo White kitten who's replaced Tom Heinsohn, who passed away.
Wow, awesome. Love it. Well, just don't name any pets or dogs after Wiggy. They'll never shut up.
Full names, too. JoJo White, come over here. Like, that's a little bit much. Couldn't you just go with JoJo?
I mean of all Celtics, I mean, JoJo, nice guy, always at the Garden, but I don't know.
Hey, anyway. Bob Cousy, come on. You want a treat?
Does he say Poimina? Ken, New Hampshire, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
You know, I'm pretty old, and I go way back with the NBA, and I'm not bothered by the fact that superstars have always gotten a little bit of a pass from the officials. But when it comes to Giannis, it seems like they've taken two rules and totally thrown them out of the rule book. Charging and traveling. He gets away with it all the time, especially the traveling. And last night it was so obvious on the replays, he picks up his feet, he puts them down, he picks them up, puts them down.
Ken.
And then Jason Brown, Jalen Brown, when he's covering him.
Ken, nobody calls, they don't call traveling in the NBA, basically. I mean, it's no longer, it's not, you have as many steps as you need, especially if you're one of the best players in the world.
What about the charge?
Yeah, no, the charges I agree with, but I don't know. I find ref talk to be kind of, unless it's so egregious. We did it earlier in the series on the Greg Hill Show when even guys like Wilbon and national pundits were commenting on how absurd it was. But I don't think last night the Celtics won or lost. I don't think it was closer. I think it was the Celtics. The refs were not the issue. I don't want to talk about them all day because I find it tedious and we can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, and look, the Giannis situation, like there was a blatant travel last night. But overall, I don't think like it's egregious with him traveling all the time. I don't know how you officiate him in terms of the block charge, because you could call a foul on Giannis every time. You could call a foul on a Celtic every time. It's sort of like officiating Shaq. Like, he was fouled basically on every play, and he was dishing out contact. So I don't know how you – I feel like he's the most difficult guy in the league to officiate. But to the first guy's point, Mike and Malden, about the Celtics and this being the Kelly Olynyk game, right, if they don't finish the job, I'm not going to go to that extreme. Like, Kelly Olynyk's been a role player. But I feel like if they don't finish this tomorrow, it's going to be an incredibly big disappointment for a couple of factors. A, you should have won on Wednesday. Like, this series should be done. And look, maybe things change the domino effect of what happens in game six Friday night if you had already won that game, right? Maybe the mentality's different. But nonetheless, they should have won game five. They could have won a game earlier in the series, too. So this should be over. You should win this. Not to mention the fact that their second best player, their other all-star, Chris Middleton, has not played in a single game in the series. So if they do lose on tomorrow afternoon, I do feel like it's going to be a massive disappointment, and it's going to be, nobody's going to be talking about Tatum's performance in game six. I mean, we'll remember it, but I don't think it's going to be something that holds up through the test of time, because the Celtics, the storyline will be the Celtics missed an opportunity with the way the NBA, by the way, the landscape has played out. There's no, like, super team, right? There's no Golden State Warriors from a couple of years ago. They're back, but they don't have Durant. It's not the same quality of team. There's no LeBron Heat. There's no Kobe Shaq Lakers. Like, if the Celtics win this series, odds are they will be the favorite to win the championship.
Right, but here's two things. One, if the Bucks win tomorrow, I think they're favored over the Heat. Do you agree?
Yeah.
So they get to the finals, and then who knows what. But let's say they win consecutive titles, and Tatum has that game six, they lose in game seven. I don't think next year you're like, Tatum has something to prove. He proved it in game six. The Bucks had won eight consecutive elimination games. Then they go, the Celtics go after a debacle, a travesty of a loss in game five. They go to Milwaukee, win an elimination game against that team. My guess is it might be, whatever. They had won eight in a row, so very difficult for other teams to do that. And then that team wins its second straight championship. They beat Golden State, you know, in the finals. We're not looking back at that series. So I think the context right now, I think Sunday afternoon, if they lose, there's going to be heat on Tatum. But I also think that because it's Milwaukee and it's not exactly the Lakers, the Celtics, the whatever, it's not an all-time blue blood organization that wins a lot, and it's in a tiny market and they're honks, like, you don't have that same sentiment about the Bucks.
Yeah, I could get there if Middleton was playing. Like, if you lost a series and Chris Middleton was playing, I could get to that. But the fact that Chris Middleton, who is a top 25-ish player in this league, and he's the second-best player on that team, he's definitely the second-most important offensive player. He bails them out in the fourth quarter all the time. That's where I'd say this would be a disappointment. Like, if they go head-to-head with the Bucks and it's seven games and Chris Middleton's there, fine. Like, I can live with that. The Celtics, Tatum and Brown are still arriving in the NBA, but for them to not get it done without them having their second-best player and essentially losing to Holiday's a nice player, but he's really had one good game in the series. He has not been great in this. He was not good last night. So without Middleton in the series, this is just, it would be a massive missed opportunity. Because here's the other thing is, like, there's no guarantee. Like, it was different, like, a couple of years ago, right, where you look at a situation like with the 76ers when they lost that game to Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors in the conference semifinals. That team could have won the championship. I mean, they were a couple bounces away from going into overtime. And look, they broke up their team. They got rid of Jimmy Butler. But the circumstances don't always play itself out the way they are. The way that the East has lined up where you're the best team, the way that there's no super team in the West, I feel like you have got to capitalize on this opportunity. Because are you ever going to get this performance from Al Horford? He may not even be here 2 years from now, maybe not even next year. So I just feel like everything that's gone right for the Celtics, they have to finish the job tomorrow, or we're going to look back and say they let that one slip away.
Yeah, I think that in the moments and in the weeks following Game 7, if they lose tomorrow, there will be a recalibration of how we view Tatum. But what this season has shown me and what this team has shown in this series specifically is that there's nothing too big for them. There's no moment they can't meet. There's no situation in a hostile environment against the defending champions. I know without Middleton, but Giannis is the, you know, MVP of the league last year. He's an all-time great in the beginning of his prime. And you're a team that's been, you know, you're without Robert Williams. I mean, not saying he's anywhere near Chris Middleton, but it's not like the Celtics are sitting there in perfect health. And for me, I look at this team this year, and it is just remarkable that they are at the beginning of something we deemed was at the end. That we began the season saying that the Celtics had to lose Tatum or Brown. They couldn't keep both. Mike Gorman famously said across the street that they play like they met each other on the bus to the game. To see where they are and where they've matured to, and then the candor and the honesty out of Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Ime after that win yesterday, it's so refreshing to hear athletes contextualize their performance in the immediate moments after their game. Other teams in this town, Patriots has worked forever. I'm not ripping them. But Brady never talked about what, you know, winning his sixth meant in terms of the history of the game, or what Belichick's sixth Super Bowl win as a head coach meant, or what this performance from Gronk, or what this from Dante Hightower, whatever. It's always, we're on to the next, we're you know, it's a team win. The Celtics last night understood the magnitude of what they were against and how amazing it was that they got through it. And what they witnessed with Tatum, in the history of this franchise, you're probably never going to see a better elimination game performance.
Yeah, and like, you have a guy now. You have one of the top 5 to 10 guys in the NBA, which I think it was sort of established this year. He finished 6th in the MVP, but last night was kind of like a stamp on all that. But the other thing I'll say as it pertains to like the Ime Udoka situation is I feel like Brad Stevens is kind of getting the raw deal on this, because I truly believe that if Danny Ainge is running this team, A, they don't trade away a first-round pick to attach to Kemba's bad contract to take back Al Horford, which clearly worked out, right? Danny wouldn't have seen that as a win in the trade.
What a horrible signing Kemba was. My God.
He was horrible. At the time, the guy had 3 knee procedures before that signing. It was like Danny was panicking because they lost Kyrie, so he needed another small diminutive point guard. He went after Kemba Walker. And then at the deadline, Curtis, think about it. Derek White is the 6th, 7th man on this team. He's a really good player. Best plus-minus in the series, plus 58. But would Danny Ainge have given up a first-round pick for that guy? Because remember what happened after that. Now, a lot of Celtics fans liked the deal. I like the deal in particular. But a lot of the national media said the Spurs won the deal. Like, that was too high of a price, a first-round pick for Derek White. Brad Stevens said, F the picks. Like, let's go get a good player. And now look at this team. Basically, unless the ball boy, Peyton Pritchard's on the court, there's not a place that you can, like, pick at defensively. Now, Giannis will go at Jaylen, but that's Giannis Antetokounmpo is, like, a massive individual. But I feel like from Brad coaching, where he had to hide Kemba, he had to hide Isaiah Thomas defensively because they were such liabilities, he felt like, okay, if I'm going to have a coach here, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put him in a position where he has to hide guys defensively. And he's basically built, I feel like, the team he wanted. And think about the guy he brought back, Horford, right? The guy that Danny Ainge didn't want to pay. He brought back that guy. So I feel like from his coaching experience, he realized how difficult it is to coach in these series, right? Like, think about if Kemba was in the series. I mean, they would just be going at him. I mean, Kemba would be giving up, like, on him, they'd score like 25, 26 points a game. So I feel like Brad did Ime Udoka a lot of favors by, from what he had to deal with in his time as the coach.
My favorite with Kemba was the Celtics media saying he was better than Kyrie when they made that acquisition. I mean, it was pathetic. But I think it has been a brilliant offseason. It starts with Wick in getting Brad Stevens in a position where, in hindsight, it looks logical. I mean, nobody knows college talent better than Brad Stevens. He was coaching the team for 5, 6 years. He knows what they were lacking. And then you bring in a guy that connects. So you had Brad that connected with the roster in terms of performance and what they needed. And you had a head coach that connected with your best player. And it's turned out to be amazing. However, Danny Ainge got Jason Tatum 3rd after Markelle Fultz. I mean, that without that decision by Danny Ainge, I mean, you're nowhere near this. So
who would then forget how to shoot? But no, that's a good point. Like, Danny Ainge built the main pieces of this team. He drafted Smart at, 7th overall? And remember, the Jaylen Brown pick was royally criticized.
Yep.
Remember people around here wanted Chris Dunn, who he got drafted at the age of like 32?
What was the Buddy Hield draft?
Oh, yeah, that was the same one.
Oh, they wanted Buddy Hield.
It was Buddy Hield and Chris Dunn, and he took Jaylen Brown, and he kind of had the vision, and he wanted these two-way wings, and it worked out. So, yeah, I'm not trying to pile on Danny Ainge. He built the main pieces of this team, but I just feel like for this team to get to where it is right now and for them to be, since January 1st, the best team in the NBA, I think that they needed a change in terms of the guy running the team, because I do feel like for lack of a better term, Ainge sort of got high on his supply when it comes to like winning trades, the Nets trade, the Tatum move with Fultz. And it was, he always wanted to be winning these deals. And Brad is more concerned about, it feels like, putting the best team out there for the coach. And that's what he's done.
Well, and it was clear after the comments with Kyrie regarding race and Boston and all that stuff, Danny's comments following that really were the final straw.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It revealed a chasm between he and the players on his team that it's, you know, they resolved. I thought it was just a complete and total facade and charade when they had the press conference with thanking Danny, hiring Brad, and like that this is all a great, happy move. But you can't argue with it. And, you know, the thing that with Danny that was always infuriating to me was that he insulated himself with all these stockpiles of picks. Like, it was his sort of, you know, we're always going to have an ability. But in hindsight, he used those picks. That Nets deal will go down in NBA history as one of the great thefts of all time.
Yeah, and if you didn't have freaking Prokhorov running that team, who was just, like, out of his damn mind, that deal would have never happened. Like, the executives of that team did not want to make that deal. But the owner of the team's like, we have to win now. They had Deron Williams and Joe Johnson. I mean, that was just an idiotic trade. It made no sense at the time. And I'm glad now the Nets with the team that they have, they're getting burned. But I did want to, like, one thing about the series that is really starting to aggravate me is the local guy, Pat Connaughton. Like, I feel like he hits every big shot he takes. It's so annoying. Like, I don't know how he does this. Do you notice, like, when he takes a three in the corner, he doesn't even bring the ball down. He just, like, catches at his forehead.
Yeah,
and he
it's
has
so
ability
weird.
To, he's hitting every big, if outside of Giannis, I feel like, now Holiday was great in the game five, but I feel like that guy just hits every big shot he takes in the series. I mean, last night, the guy was outstanding. I feel like in a lot of these games, he's been their second best player. He's just absolutely killing the Celtics.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I don't know. But Wiggy's answer is to bring Courtney courtside tomorrow for game seven and just have her, you know, the thought process was that she brings Ken's daughter and says it's yours. So, because they dated for years and years. So we'll see if that can get him off his game. But he has been, guys like that, I don't know why, like Austin Crozier always seemed to hit every shot when he played Boston. But I agree, Pat Connaughton's been great and I don't know how to stop him. 617-779-7937 if you want to join us talking about the Celtics. Do they have to win tomorrow for Jason Tatum's Game 6 to live on? I think it's kind of there, but it is a huge opportunity for this team when you consider what the NBA landscape has looked like in recent years to be one win away from a conference final, the 30th of this town in the last 20 years, and four wins away against the Heat to get to the NBA Finals, where anything can happen. You have a my friend Nate Silver, who has never been wrong on everything, on anything, at 538 every day.
Yeah, from 2016, he wasn't wrong, right?
He might have missed a state or two, but the 21-22 NBA predictions are out, and they change and update every day after every game regarding your chances. The Celtics right now are the overwhelming favorite to win the finals. They have a 1-3 shot, according to this. Second place is the Suns with a 25% shot. So I don't know how the hell he puts that math together, whatever algorithm he uses to get that result. But this is, they are on the precipice of being the favorites in the conference final to go back to the NBA Finals. And I, in a million years, even in January when they went on a little run to start, you're like, okay, this is nice, but where's this been all year? And then it just stayed.
Yeah, and like all these other teams are having their issues. Like Golden State can't play defense right now. Phoenix is dealing with a situation where ever since Chris Paul turned 37, he has more turnovers than field goals. And the Miami Heat, I mean, just not a really potent offense. That'll be a battle for the Celtics if they get there. But I'm wondering, too, like the other thing with this is, and I don't know where you stand on this, but I mean, Mutt was just hammering Robert Williams last night.
Well, Mutt was hammered.
No, Robert Williams, it comes down like it's a pain tolerance thing because he missed last game, of course, and he's been dealing with that. He's coming off the meniscus tear. And a lot of people were pissed off last night that Robert Williams didn't play. And from what I can garner from what Ime Udoka said, I feel like it's a movement thing. I feel like they don't feel like he can perform at the level he needs to. And I would also say, like, I feel like one of the things that the Celtics would try to do is not give too much information to the Bucks, right? Like, so if the Celtics know that it's worse than they're leading on, this is a good thing, right? Because you want them to have to think, like, in the back of their head that Robert Williams is going to play or something.
I saw that, too. Soft. I didn't hear Mutt postgame. I was in blanket bay.
Mutt's not happy. He's not happy about it. I'll tell you that.
That is so absurd. I was, the first thing I thought of when he was out yesterday was they really rushed him. Like, if they didn't bring him back as early as they did, as quickly as they did, then he might be healthy right now to play. But yeah. If you're an athlete and your knee, you don't trust it, you're of no service because you're thinking about the wrong thing. You're not concentrating on, you know, rebounding over Giannis, or you're not concentrating on blocking someone's shot or getting a dunk down the other side. Like, if you're in your head with your own injury and you don't trust that you're healthy, then you're doing a disservice to the roster. Like, how could you say a guy 2-3 weeks removed from meniscus surgery is playing an NBA game and he's soft?
Yeah, like as if he doesn't want to be out there. That's the problem I had. And a lot of people agreed with Mon on this last night. But
yeah,
it's
the lowest common denominator nonsensical take. Like, well, if you're going to say a guy's soft, then you can't say that after he comes back weeks removed from a knee surgery.
Right, and early. He came back 3.5 weeks. The timetable was 4 to 6 weeks. So I feel like this has to be a thing where he just does not have the ability to push off that knee. And to your point...
Well, he has a bone bruise in his surgically repaired knee.
Right.
So
from the hit with Giannis.
Yeah.
And like,
so what are we doing here?
Yeah. The other thing about Robert Williams is, like, his game is predicated on his athleticism. He's not like a skilled player. He's a guy that's going to jump up and down, block shots, get rebounds. I do feel like a lot of this narrative came because of what happened in Game 5, where the Milwaukee Bucks in that game got 41% of their misses. The NBA leader this year was at 33%. So Robert Williams would have helped when it comes to the offense, for the defensive glass, if you will.
Right.
And I just feel like the problem for me is, well, if the Celtics do advance, how long does this issue linger? Because Ime Udoka keeps saying that it's a day-to-day situation. They thought originally it was a pain threshold thing and the swelling went down. But I just feel like, quite frankly, the guy's not right. If he could be out there, he would. I mean, clearly they could use him right now. They're playing freaking Daniel Tice.
Honest to God, there is nothing more infuriating than sports fans sitting at home calling a guy weak because he's not playing an NBA game on a surgically repaired knee weeks after the... Have you ever had surgery? There's no such thing as minor surgery. People who say minor surgery, they say it about people who are having it, not their own. So if you agree with Mutt, I'd actually love to hear from you. 617-779-7937. Explain to me how Robert Williams is soft and weak. At the top of the hour, we're going to get into a little bit of the Patriots, their schedule, and who the hell is going to be calling offensive plays. Brian Barrett in for Ken Laird. It's the Ken and Curtis Show.
We're back, Ken and Curtis, on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
I'm sure there are three or four Celtics dealing with something right now. So if it's just a pain issue, sorry, he should be out there. If it's structural and you rushed him back and you effed that up, then say it. Why are you afraid to say that? You're making the player look bad. I can't be the only one that feels this way. That if it's just a pain thing and he can't hurt it long term, that he should be out there. Even if it's 15, 20 minutes, 10 minutes. If it's just pain, Robert Williams should be out there. Game 6, win or go home.
Oh, man. I miss Mutt Rage so much. I love the Mutt Man, but holy cow. Yeah, I'm sure there are players in the Celtics that are dinged, they got to get their ankle taped, or they have a sore arm or whatever. He had surgery to replace and fix a meniscus tear less than a month ago. He played in the first series 3.5 weeks removed from that surgery, correct?
That has a 4 to 6 week timetable.
So, we have the video. So, my man, Moss Gathers Nowhere, who's our stenographer of the show, does a great job. No Moss Gathers. He found the video of the play that the bone bruise occurred with Giannis and Time Lord. But it's like, I always find this so laughable. Like, I understand, like, you know, David Price not starting because of the allergies, or, you know, we've had some bad excuses for injuries in this town. But I really don't think the same person that did the unthinkable, because after we went back to Mutt's show the day they announced the meniscus surgery for Robert Williams, I believe, I don't know, I don't listen every minute, but my guess is he's like, oh, he's done for the playoffs, right? That was everybody's thought. That was my thought.
Assumption, yeah.
So you said he wasn't going to come back and play. He comes back and plays, re-injures it slightly with a bone bruise in the same knee that he had surgery on less than a month ago, and you're calling him soft for not playing in Game 6.
I still have very cold hands and very cold feet.
Right. I mean, poor circulation is not an excuse to not play a Major League game. Although, David Price, more of a gamer than Chris Sale, and I will argue that for the rest of time, David Price is Chris Sale with a grumpy exterior. That's why everybody hated him. Everybody loves Chris Sale because of people like you that are like defend the Red Sox dugout at all costs.
No, Chris Sale's pitched 34 innings since he got the extension.
Allergies is something I've always had to battle.
Right. And David Price actually won you a World Series in 2018, something that Chris Sale came in the ninth because he, like, could you imagine that? Sorry, this is going to get me on a tangent, but could you imagine if it was David Price who hadn't really played well, hadn't pitched much in the playoff run, and he demands that Cora allows him to close out the game to win the World Series? He would have been getting barbecued by the Boston media. But Chris Sale comes in out of nowhere, closes the game, they win the World Series, and it's like, yay! I can't stand the double standard.
Well, and I think this is an ownership issue more so than a Chris Sale issue, because Chris Sale, I would have signed the contract too if I was him. This is on the ownership group that overcompensated for John Lester, right? I mean, this isn't just a Dave Dombrowski deal that Chris Sale got. It's because the ownership group, Chris Sale literally said this offseason, he told Bradford he should thank John Lester for getting that contract extension. Oh. He actually said that because of they messed that one up. So the fact that the ownership group decided, okay, well, we can't lose this guy because we don't want the bad PR, it was just a dumb decision because, I mean, look at his 3 years prior to that. Final year with the White Sox, dealing with an issue down the stretch of the season. In his first season here, the 300 strikeout season, was not the same guy, was dealing with an issue. And he sucked against the Astros in the postseason. If you go to the World Series year, obviously we know he was shut down in August for a while. Comes back, he has like some stomach thing. Remember that? Like he missed a start. Yep. And to your point about closing the game, he was supposed to start that game, but he couldn't start that game because he was dealing with something. So I put this more so on the ownership group than the individual. If I'm Chris Sale, I'm signing that contract too.
But of course, that goes without saying. I mean, they gave a bad deal. I mean, everybody with a brain can see that it's the fault of Dombrowski and the ownership and whoever approved it. But I'm talking about the reaction of the fans who have nothing to do with the contracts of either guy. One is despised and one is beloved. When the one that's despised did far more to bring a championship here than Chris Sale has done, and Chris Sale was injured during
a
lockout.
In the playoffs.
I'm allergic to dogs.
Right. What's the purpose of playing?
Well, Chris Sale was pitching at a Cy Young pace during the regular season, and they set the record for the most wins in the history of the franchise. Sale was a large part of that, and he was significantly better than Price during the season.
Okay, but do you get past the Astros without Price?
No, I think that David Price does not get nearly enough credit for that run. Quite frankly, I think he should have been the World Series MVP. But I don't think that we can dismiss what Sale did in 18 before the playoffs. I mean, the guy was outstanding. He's part of the reason you win that
great
amount of games.
Right, and I think David Price has had outstanding runs. And if David Price, during a lockout, fractured a rib and missed the first 3 months of the season,
crushed.
He'd be getting crushed on a daily basis.
I agree with you for the most part. It's a personality thing, and Chris Sale is, as one guy used to call him, frail. I mean, he is frail.
I wonder where he is today, that fine gentleman.
And like that's what pisses me off about this team is like they knew that they had Chris Sale. They knew he was injury prone, and they didn't do anything about it. They just factored in that he was going to be a major contributor this year, and he's not going to be.
Well,
frail.
Oh God, Brian O'Halloran basically told me that Bogarts is gone. But this isn't a Red Sox day. I'm not going to get waylaid. They won last night. Let's give them applause. 7-1. Keep winning. When the Bruins and the Celtics are still going, and then you'll have an audience when you're done. So keep doing that. But Dan in Brockton wants to talk about Mutt's hot take on the Rob Williams injury. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm great. I think you're almost there. If Time Lord be playing baseball, nobody'd say a thing. But because he's playing basketball or hockey, you know, they expect him back immediately.
I don't know. Not at all. I don't understand that point.
Why would we say this about baseball? What's the difference?
I just think it's also, even if it was solely a bone bruise, then you can still miss time because of it. Do you think Robert Williams doesn't want to be on the floor to help his team win? This team seems like a relatively close-knit group.
Well, yeah, and like Ime Udoka said before the game last night that the soreness isn't from the surgery. So he's dealing with another injury on top of that with the bone bruise. So it's two totally different separate things as it pertains to the two injuries. And this is a guy that's been banged up historically throughout his whole career. And if he can't go out there and legitimately jump, what's the point of playing him?
Right.
I mean, that's basically worse than Daniel Tice. If he can't use his athleticism, what's the point of him being out there? He becomes a non-entity for the team.
And in essence, your issue really is with Ime and not with Rob Williams. I mean, it's up to Ime who's going to play. And if he doesn't believe Rob Williams can benefit the program, then what's the point?
And I think, like, okay, the Celtics obviously know more than they're leading on with Rob Williams, but I think it doesn't behoove Ime Udoka to say, yeah, he's out for the series. Why would you say that, right?
Right.
I mean, just at least keep it in their heads that Robert Williams could be back.
Even in the build-up to the Nets series, I thought it was all sort of gamesmanship by the Celtics when they were like, Robert Williams was spotted at practice today. I'm like, there is no way he's playing, but I understand it. Make the Nets prepare for something that they, you know, they waste their time in a direction that's not about stopping Jalen or Jason. But anyway, let's get this quick sale and price call out before the top of the hour. Kevin in Quincy, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you doing, Curtis?
Awesome.
So I agree with you on the Rob Williams thing because, like you said, surgery, it's easy for other people to say how you are feeling. However, I disagree with you on the Sale Price thing because the reason why Red Sox fans like Chris Sale is because they're smart and they know that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, he's like, he's only 31, Curtis. He's still going to win, you know, 75 more games in the pros. He's going to end up with, he might be the last pitcher to get 3,000 strikeouts. I mean,
he's not going to win 75 more games.
He's 31.
You think he's going to win? Chris Sale's going to win 74 more games.
He's the fastest. He's the fastest pitcher in history to 2,000 strikeouts. Okay?
Who cares about that? I don't care if he's a Hall of Famer.
Okay, but I do.
Why? What's the purpose of being a Hall of Famer? Don't you just want your team to win? I mean, I don't even understand that. Like, why would I? When Ricky Henderson played for the Red Sox, I didn't love him because he was going to be a Hall of Famer. He wasn't a Hall of Famer when he was on the Red Sox.
Yeah, no, that's it. Well, and first of all, the 75 more wins is an idiotic take. I know it's like a old stat in baseball, but Chris Sale has 114 wins in his career. You think he's going to win 75 more games? And who cares if Chris Sale is, well, I don't even think he's a Hall of Famer right now, quite frankly. He's never won a Cy Young. So I don't think he's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
But even if he is, I could give two craps. I don't care who goes to the Hall of Fame. I want the team to contend.
Right.
They for whatever reason, John Henry has decided that he's not going to go over the luxury tax threshold very often. So that is his contract, Chris Sale's contract, is preventing this team from contending because they're not going to just throw bad money after bad money after bad money. They're going to stay relatively reasonable as long as Chaim Bloom's here, it appears.
It is, but I would say it's more on Chaim Bloom than it is in terms of this year's team because they went in assuming Chris Sale is going to be back sometime in June, and now he's not going to be back, I would say, at the earliest in July, right, based on the time. And we don't even know what the hell he's dealing with.
And what's the point of bringing him back in July if you're 15 games out? Wouldn't you just say rest and get back for next year?
Well, like, their whole idea got ruined by Chris Sale. Their whole idea coming into the season was that Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock were going to be these bullpen weapon guys that could give you multiple innings, right? Neither one of those guys were supposed to be in the rotation. Now Whitlock's in the rotation. He's your best reliever. Tanner Houck's now in the bullpen finally, but he was in the rotation when he was supposed to be coming out of the bullpen. So the Sale injury screwed everything up. And remember, you had time. You came back. You went to spring training. You find out this guy. I don't know how the hell he did this. I mean, it may go back to the frailty, whatever. But the fact being, you had this in front of you. You knew that this was happening. You knew Chris Sale was not going to be available until at least June, and you didn't do anything about it to address the team. No, and I put that more in Bloom than the ownership group.
No, John Henry acquired the Penguins, not a closer. It was quite the offseason.
That is true.
So not a really good year for John and the Sox brass, but, you know, still early. Sox are on the come. They had a big win last night, and look forward to your thoughts continuing on Robert Williams' absence last night. Did it irritate you as much as it did Mutt? And we'll get to some audio that I find incredibly disturbing when it comes to the Patriots coaching staff next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.